Oh, hey, well, cheers.
Cheers, man.
Blink, dink.
There it is.
I don't think my dog likes that. She's not happy.
Doesn't like your theme song?
Yeah.
welcome to Sippin' Mimos. I'm Elliot.
I'm Jake.
This is the podcast where we talk about 90s radio rock and 90s electronica while sipping beverages, often mimosas. But I think you got something different today. What do you got?
I'm going with a margarita tonight.
Oh, fancy. I've got a beer and then a ranch water on deck.
What do you think what do you think about those ranch waters?
I've been moving away from beer because it makes me like blech. And then so I've been moving my way through that seltzer world, which is all so trendy now. And like White Claws are gross. Don't like those anymore because they're nasty. Then like I jumped onto local Austin East Siders seltzer line, which was pretty good. Yeah. And then tried like the Bishop Ciders that they make a cool they make this one called the Dark Side, and then a crackberry. That's called fun.
I remember you telling me about the crackberry.
But it's like really tart and sweet. And then I found the ranch water guys, and it's just right. And they've got like a spicy one that's like really good.
Ooh,
with like a little spicy, like jalapeno cayenne thing going on. It's quite nice. So I've been on that kick.
I'm a big fan of ranch water, particularly the spicy one. You put a little some tahine from like HEB or your grocery store. It's like chili powder.
Yeah. A little spicy salt stuff.
I tried those, talking about seltzers, I tried the Topo Chico seltzer recently.
I can't find it anywhere. How was it?
It was very good. I enjoyed it. I'm right there with you with the White Claws. I mean, I don't mind them. They're not my favorite. I feel like it has a little bit more flavor. It has like the perfect amount of flavor that I like. We poured them in over ice and just, I had the mango and the pineapple.
Oh,
which are really good. And my girlfriend had strawberry guava, which.
Strawberry guava?
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
That was pretty good.
Put a little spiciness on that one. And then now you're talking. Where'd you get them from, your shop, or like did you go out and find them?
From our HEB.
Okay.
Yeah, she did a curbside. Oh, that curbside.
How about that?
Very good. And but also, I'm also kind of obsessed with Diet Cola these days.
Okay. What kind of Diet Colas are you into?
Like, just like the generic, just cola.
Okay.
Like, I'll go through like 2-3 cans a day, man.
Oh boy, you gotta watch your aspartame.
I know.
Or whatever. Well, stevia or whatever is supposed to be okay for you, right? Or what's the one that's not so bad?
Stevia, yeah.
Yeah. We're showing our age right now. what sugar substitute do you prefer, Jake?
Welcome back to Leverage Your Beverage.
Leverage Your Beverage! Oh my God. Oh my God. New segment.
But man, it's been a minute since we've recorded. I apologize about that. I've just been working on the final stretch of my graduate school project. We're almost there.
Yes, awesome. No worries.
But a lot of cool things have transpired in the world of the Mimos. The Mimo CU.
Ooh, I love that.
I'm just I'm coming out hot with the puns.
Let's do it. Yeah. All right.
So would you like to share some of the fun things that we've had going on?
Oh, well, one, I guess first off, we're on Apple. We're Apple certified. We're Apple status. So everyone out there, subscribe and spread it around, or leave, I guess if you leave comments or stars or whatever the hell, it boosts us up in the dumb thing, but whatever, just subscribe so we can thrust ourselves into your phone every time we put out a new one. Just do that.
Subscribing, you know, it'll be fun. If you do decide to leave a comment, tell us your favorite 90s music. Why not?
Yeah. And like, leave your favorite 90s album and then like ask us a question or something like that. And we'll read your shit on the show.
And the other thing, which it's been been a couple months, but pretty exciting. We're officially on Instagram.
Yes, we launched our gram, our IG. So everyone subscribe to that. It's a lot of fun.
That's Sippin' Mimos Pod. Definitely give us a follow. It's where we'll post a lot of like a lot of selfies, a lot of bathroom selfies. No, we're not doing that. Okay. We're not doing that. No. A lot of 90s related material. It's another step, you know, I feel like Ellie and I were very excited to take with this project. So definitely Apple Podcasts, Instagram, Sippin' Mimos Pod, follow and enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And the rule is anytime you or I have a mimosa, we have to take a picture and put it on the Sippin' Mimos gram. That's the rule.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't forget.
I mean, we signed that contract that said it's over with.
Yeah, it was pretty ironclad too. I had all my lawyers look at it. What else is new, man?
Just getting through the semester. You've been watching or listening to anything good lately?
Oh boy. Yeah. I forget what we talked about last, but I'm watching plenty of stuff. I saw Godzilla versus Kong. I watched the whole Snyder cut in an evening. Yeah, that's of note. Oh, and of course, WandaVision wrapped up, and at the time of recording, we're about to get the finale of Falcon and Winter Soldier. Have you been watching that?
I have, and I love it.
I think it's pretty intense, man. But oh boy, those guys are just—they're so handsome, and I fucking love Zemo. I think he's kind of hilarious.
The guy, it's
like Brule, Daniel Brule or something like that.
Yeah. From Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah. From Inglourious Basterds. Yeah. Oh, he's so good. And of course, Civil War and all that.
Yeah. He's even though he's playing like a, you know, really bad villain, you know, he's done some like awful things. Like, he's just like, oh man, you're just so dang likable.
Yeah. You know? Well, he's like charming and funny, and they get to kind of make fun of like how evil he is. He's like, he's doing the head tilt thing again, and like doing that voice. Like, it's so funny.
I love when they were flying on his jet, and I think it's like an Al Green record, and he's like, did you listen to it? And he's like, it is very good. If you listen to it, it really encapsulates the experience of the African American. And he's like, not wrong. He shouldn't say it, but he's not wrong.
Yeah, Falcon's like, he's out of line, but he's correct. Like, that's awesome. Yeah, that was great. That was great.
And just and Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan?
Yeah.
Man, they play off so well together.
They got a whole like Lethal Weapon thing going on. It's really kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. talk about Anthony Mackie. We did a rewatch of 8 Mile. A couple weeks.
Whoa! Back. Yeah. He's the bad guy rapper in 8 Mile.
He's Papa Doc.
Papa Doc. Okay. Sorry.
He went to Cranbrook. That's a private school, you know.
Yeah. All right. That's a private school. Every once in a while, I'll just pop on that final battle, like on YouTube or whatever. It's so insane.
When
Eminem, dude.
Once upon a time, like winter of 2002, I had serious dreams of being like a rapper. And
tell me, you've got some recordings
somewhere. I, you know, voice hadn't dropped yet. There's somewhere on like a cassette tape. And I would listen to that rap battle like on repeat.
Yeah.
And just be like, and like learn all Eminem's lines.
Everyone in the 313, throw your hands up with me. Oh, it's so great. Oh man.
No, notice as he stands tough. Notice that this man did not have his hands up.
It's up. Oh. And it was like, Yeah. And he just tells him how shitty his life is and raps about it. And he's like, now tell these people something they don't know about me. Oh, like, it's great.
And he's like, sup. And everyone's like, you know, taunting him. He just hands the mic to Mekhi like, Pfeiffer. And
He's like, fine, I guess I'll just go be an Avenger now.
Yeah.
And that's when he got his wings and started jogging with Steve Rogers.
I love that like alternate universe though. He's like walking out of the club and they're like, Papa Doc, and he's like, it's Sam Wilson. And then there's like,
yeah, I remember that scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Deleted 8 mile scene.
No, you have to watch after the credits. Sam Jackson shows up.
He's like, he's like, you fought hard in there. You know, you still up for a fight. And then,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know it's even cooler than being a rapper in Detroit? Going to Wakanda to fight Ultron. Or sorry, yeah, you know, or Sokovia. So. Oh man. I went and saw Paul Oakenfold.
Tell me all about it.
So we're here in Austin, of course, and all these weirdo celebs keep moving here. Like we got Elon Musk here now. Joe Rogan moved here, and I don't know how I feel about that dude. Bropra, they call him.
Bropra.
Same for Oprah for bros. He's like, it's like a douchebag goop, you know, like the Gwyneth Paltrow thing. Like he's just selling like creatine shakes and nonsense. Whatever. But he moved here. I'm pretty sure Dave Chappelle's moving here. But then also
Dave Paul Chappelle?
Well, he's here like every other week doing shows and stuff. Yeah. I think he's buddies with Rogan and he might be making it because he's like, doesn't Chappelle like famously live in Ohio or some shit?
Yeah, like on like a farm, like in like rural Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah. But Paul Oakenfold moved here. And Paul Oakenfold, we've talked about him before, I think on the BT episode. And he's like, you know, he's like one of the biggest superstar DJs ever. And just for funsies, apparently, he wanted to DJ or arranged to DJ at the new Austin rugby team opening. Me and my brother, who was very much an influence on me getting into electronic music back in the day, he's a big Oakenfold fan and a big rugby guy. So like, of course we made it like a bros night out and like go to the game. And then after the game, which was insane, by the way, it's like a really intense football / soccer thing. But there's no pads and they're just like shattering their collarbones against each other. It's bonkers. Rugby, guys. It's crazy. And then Oakenfold plays after the game and like, and people, everyone leaves. And so I ended up seeing Oakenfold with like 30, 40 people, like just in the bleachers or whatever. But also, of course, me and my brother got to meet him and take a little photo and all that. It was wild.
Were you starstruck?
No, because, no, I'll say no. Well, he was just kind of wandering around and like, my brother was getting a beer or like they made, you know, one of a kind, like Oakenfold rugby t-shirts. So I'm like, we have to get,
cool.
if it's not burnt orange, we have to get it. Cause remember Sippin' Mimo fans, buy the t-shirt, hashtag buy the t-shirt,
buy the t-shirt.
So I've got a cool like Paul Oakenfold, Austin, whatever they're called, Green Grommels, whatever, some stupid name. But he was just wandering around and like, and I'm like, Paul, my brother's name Paul, and I'm like, Paul, which got confusing in a second in the story because like he's just like wandering around like saying hi to folks and like, you know, taking selfies and shit. And my brother's not the kind of guy that I don't think he gives a shit about taking a photo with Paul Oakenfold, but I'm just like, hey, Paul Oakenfold, hey, it's my brother. We're big fans. Come on. Like take a, come on. And then like, of course we, you know, I hand my phone to the, one of Oakenfold's lady friends that we were chatting up a second ago. And she had some stories, but bless her heart. She was like, click, 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 and like took like 20 photos of my brother and I just chilling with Oakenfold, which was great. So that was fun, man. What a cool night. And so he played a set and it wasn't like your average. Well, I don't even know. Cause he plays to the room and like, so it was very much a sporting event mix. Like he's playing the, you know, the kind of dance hits you would hear at a hockey game or, you know, or I suppose a rugby match. Like, so playing the hits. So, I think I was texting you at the time, like he's playing so many songs we've already talked about on Nemo's, closed with Sandstorm. And of course fireworks erupt when it drops and all this. He played Daft Punk Around the World. And he played the song from Blade the bloodbath one. And I swear to God, he almost called you. I was like, get a load of this, man. Like, cause oh man, I was losing my mind. It was great. It was great.
You remember that new Blade sound you've been talking about?
Get a load of this. Yeah, absolutely.
Man, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, it was crazy fun. Crazy, crazy fun. Up in the bleachers that were pretty much empty behind us, because we're like, you know, just moved up to the front, and some friends of mine were there. We're all hanging out and, you know, dancing, having a good time. I was feeling it. I was just losing my mind. And then I look up, and like up at the top of the bleachers are these 12 dudes in gray hoodies, all like matching gray hoodies. So I'm like, and they looked a little intimidating, but I'm like, I'm feeling good. Oakenfold's playing. I just saw a bunch of bros like beat the shit out of each other. I'm full of confidence. I'm going to go up there and talk to them. So I'm like, I walk up the bleachers. I'm like, hey guys, what the fuck are you doing here, man? Are you digging this? Isn't this great? Look at this light show. Look at fucking Oakenfold. Isn't that awesome? I hope he plays Three Drives and Vinyl by Grease 2000. And then they're all like, we're at a bachelor party. And then I'm like, who's? And of course, the guy at the very end is like, did you say Three Drives and Vinyl by Grease 2000? I'm like, I sure fucking did. Are you getting married? Congratulations, bro. Woo! Like, come on down and dance with us. And I'm like, so he had this dude was getting married, and for his bachelor party, he's a big Oakenfold fan. He's like, I've seen him, and I saw him in 05, I saw him in 06, I went to Ibiza in 09, saw him there. Like, he's like listing off all his Oakenfold adventures, and like, I'm like, wow, this dude knows his shit. It was a goddamn blast. But all his buddies were like, I don't know what this is. We drove 40 minutes out of town, and then so I had to go 40 minutes back to get to like the bars and stuff to continue the party. But it was hilarious and a blast.
That's awesome, man.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, gentle listener, if you ever get a chance to go to a show with Elliot, I would jump at it, because it's not only are you like, you know, getting to see a band perform, but you're also, you know, spending it with like one of the most like lively people and enjoyable people I've ever known. I remember one time we were watching a 90s tribute band, Highball here in town.
And, oh, I remember that night.
And I got there a little early, and there was a line to get in. And you got in maybe about 10, 15 minutes after me. And you were like, oh man, I love this song. And it was like Lit, My Worst Enemy. Or something like that. We'll probably talk about it eventually. And you're like, I'm gonna go get a drink. And you go to the bar, but then all of a sudden I hear you over the band, like,
oh no, like, I'm that singing loud.
And yeah, like you're moving through the crowd, but it's like you're not walking, you're like floating like through the crowd. And I was just like, that's one of my best buddies right there. And you're just like, yeah. It was fantastic.
I was playing some old episodes of the Spinners. I was playing, do you remember when we did the season one finale at Gordo's, and that like 10-year-old jumped up on stage and read a poem?
Yeah, she did like a poetry slam thing.
And we freestyled a song for her about getting vaccinations, which is
that's
on point. How about that? Which is, important these days. I need to share that track.
that's what we did. Our jam we did on the, and Ruben sang, and
as the band,
yeah
as the house band, yeah. Well, we improvised like 9 songs that night. It was insane. But then we had our own little solo thing.
I definitely miss jamming with you guys when it was.
Oh my god, forget it! I'm dying. I haven't been behind a kit in a long time.
Just like an incredible all around musician, our good friend Anthony is just.
Mm-hmm.
Insanely gifted, and
yeah,
and of course Elliot and I, but man, mm-hmm. We kind of had this thing where I remember the first time I saw you guys at Gordo's up here, and if you're ever in town, Gordo's, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's where Elliot and I met.
It was a
quiet night, and not a lot of people had shown up to open mic, and so y'all just like jammed, and I remember being like, are y'all in a band? And y'all were just like, no, we just kind of hang out here and play. And I was like, I gotta be friends with these guys. Like, I gotta be friends with these three dudes.
There's gonna be a little like bronze plaque on the side of Gordo's. Like, this is where Sippin' Mimos kind of began. and it'll become a historical Austin landmark, and they won't be able to tear it down or whatever, or turn it into condos.
I like that idea, man. This is where the multi conglomerate powerhouse network.
Yeah, the podcast that changed the world by looking backwards at old music.
I'll tell you, man. One thing I've been telling my girlfriend is like once can comfortably like I will never pass up an opportunity to play an open mic or go see a show or go jam or anything.
Yeah. We're on our way out of this thing, it seems to be. You know, everyone's eligible for the vax. So everyone go out there and get it if you're listening. And if you're not dead yet, go get the goddamn vaccination.
Listen to our This Band Is Real vaccination
song. Yeah. Vaccinate Your Children, I think it's called. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so ready to get out there again. So
absolutely. The more people that get it, the closer we are to jamming out and all having a good time together again.
And then we could potentially do like a first ever Sip Mimos live show.
Oh, that's the dream. That's the dream right there.
We've been doing a rewatch of Mighty Ducks 1 and D2 Mighty Ducks.
D2? Okay.
Do you remember those movies?
Sure, of course.
Oh man, Emilio Estevez just getting into scrape.
Where's he been?
They did that. I think he directed a lot of stuff, and they did that like Mighty Ducks TV show for Disney.
Is that out yet?
Mm-hmm.
Have you peeped it?
I haven't watched it yet. We have to watch D3, which I'm not too crazy about.
Because you might be totally lost with the Mighty Ducks TV show.
I don't know. If Joshua Jackson doesn't show up for that TV show.
Oh, he has to. And Kenan, right? Kenan Thompson from SNL.
Kenan was.
Isn't he Knuckle Puck?
Yeah. Dude, and yeah. It's okay because I love Kenan Thompson. He's like the best part of Saturday Night Live and has been for like the past like decade.
I know. He's like 11 years or 12 years or something. It's crazy.
But he's so young in that D2 Mighty Ducks. And he's like, he hasn't had like a growth spurt yet, like that he had like on All That. And so he's so young. And I'm just like, wow. And, but it's good. And it's one of my all time favorite characters in any movie, like talking Star Wars 2. Fulton Reed, played by Elgin Hansen from he played the guy who gets decapitated in Idle Hands with Seth Green.
Okay,
that's Foggy Nelson.
Wait. All right, listeners, help me out. I think that's the 18th time Idle Hands has come up on the show.
I'm just planting the seeds for our next Halloween bonanza because we're gonna watch that movie.
that sounds fine to me.
Boy. It's yes, Elden Hansen. I think I said Elgin a second ago. Sorry, Sipping Mimos. He's Fulton Reed, the tough guy. And he can't skate. Oh, so good. But you mentioned the movie you'd watched a second ago, and before we dive into our albums, like to chit chat about it. So I guess the question is, do you still have butterflies from Godzilla versus Kong?
Oh, I was hoping we were gonna talk about Snyder Cut.
We can talk about Snyder Cut.
No, it's fine. Godzilla versus Kong. It was Godzilla versus Kong.
So good.
How does Kong stay on the boat when he's jumping up and down on it and shit? Like, don't those things rock? Like, are those boats that stable? Like, the shipping boats, like, can a giant gorilla jump up and down on them and, like, fight Godzilla without them tipping over?
I think you just kind of have to just turn off.
Yeah. Yep. I figured that was the answer, yeah.
We watched it with my sister, and my sister was like, wait, so they're going to the center of the universe in that spaceship? Why isn't Kong dying? I'm just like, just
turn off. Shut up!
Just turn off the little switch and just watch the monkey fight the iguana.
Like, and it takes them about 4 minutes to get to the center of the earth from the surface. I'm like, wait a minute. What? Okay. I don't mind turning my brain off like that. It's fine. The fights were fun. The axe was cool. And Mechagodzilla was cool, of course. Oh, spoilers. Sorry. They were pretty careful about not letting anyone know about Mechagodzilla.
Yeah. What did you think of that Snyder Cut?
Did you watch it?
I did.
You did?
I watched it in an afternoon.
Yeah, I did as well. Yeah, afternoon and evening. I took those little act breaks are kind of perfect because I'm like, okay, I can step outside, make a phone call, whatever, make a sandwich, come back to it. It's better than what they're now calling Justice League. which is a burn. Poor guy, fuck him, I guess. What a fall from grace Joss Whedon's had the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It's a 4 hour long Justice League movie. It's pretty close to the same storyline ish. It just makes it a little better. It gives it room to breathe. And like, it's got cooler moments, like Cyborg's more in it, which is great. He's got more of an arc. Yeah. The introduction of Flash is great because he's got that amazing car accident sequence when he grabs the hot dog midair.
Yeah.
Which is, but it's still like, it's still so very odd, and it's still like, I still have, my issues story-wise with it. Like, I don't like that Batman recruits everyone. He should be the one that shows up last minute, like Hulk and Avengers. He should be the one that begrudgingly joins the league because he works alone, man. He's fucking Batman. It's odd to me that he would be the one to form the team. I don't know. But that's, weird. Why would they do a Death of Superman thing after the second movie? And when it was clear that like mostly everyone kind of hated him, and why are we mourning him and all this? I don't know. So it's weird, but it was better. What do you think about the epilogue with Jared Leto and the nightmare sequence and all that? And we heard Batman say fuck.
Yeah. It was interesting. It was neat to, I'm all for like, tying different movies and stories together. So it was kind of neat, like bringing that like Joker from the Suicide Squad into this universe. So it's kind of, so you think about the Suicide Squad and the Emancipation of Harley Quinn, which I loved. That all is happening in the same Snyder universe, which I liked stuff like that. I like thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
It was neat. It was neat to see Deathstroke.
Yeah.
It was neat to see him. Visually, it was.
Your voice went too high. Yeah, and that's like apologetically into it, I guess.
I liked when they brought Superman back. I liked that.
It's way better in this version, right? Yeah.
When he looks and he sees the Flash, thinks he's like getting one up on Superman, like he's gonna run around him.
But oh yeah.
Superman sees him.
Well, that was like, in
that's scary.
That was in the original cut too.
Oh yeah, I never saw the original one.
Oh really?
I should watch it just to.
Yeah, don't worry about it. You saw the better version. You're better. You're fine. Did the 4-3 the ratio thing throw you off?
At first, but then after a while, kind of just didn't realize it was there.
That was a surprise. I think they announced that it was going to be 4-3, but like I started it up. Like, here we go, man, and then. This movie is in 4-3 to maintain the creator's vision. I'm like, oh, but I guess it's because it's all shot in IMAX and it was meant to be seen on that ratio. That's what I gathered. But yeah, you kind of ignore it after a while. Yeah, it's odd.
I haven't seen an IMAX movie since like Force Awakens, honestly.
Oh, I saw Spider-Man Homecoming in IMAX 3D, and it was bonkers. The Washington Monument sequence, I was like dizzy and sick to my stomach. It was nuts. Yeah, because like all those shots of like over his shoulder, like down the Washington Monument, I'm like, ugh. It got really crazy. It was cool though.
But you know, one of those things that, you know, when Batman, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. Superman first came back and he sees Lois Lane for the first time.
Uh-huh. Lois,
of course, who's been mourning.
Yeah.
The loss of.
There it is.
You know, one thing I imagine.
Oh, this is my favorite part. This is my favorite part of every one of these episodes. What? Okay, so what? Yeah, when Superman comes back and Lois has been mourning, yeah.
One thing I can imagine that he would probably say to her is, after giving her a hug, he could look her in the eye and say, "Lois, no more tears."
Here we go. So Ozzy Osbourne, No More Tears.
Ozzy's No More Tears from the good year of 1991.
Yeah. I noticed on the wiki some of it was recorded in 89. I almost got upset, but it's fine.
Oh, really?
And I'm fucking with you.
Threw it out. Like.
There are some hits on this album, man.
This one rocks.
I didn't know he had so many solo stuff. I knew, you know, I'm a Sabbath, right? I'm a Sabbath fan, of course. Yeah. But like, he's got a bunch of solo stuff.
Yeah, this was his sixth solo album, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. And not his last either, right?
No, he did one as recently as 2019, which was really interesting. Yeah, it was produced by like Post Malone's producer, and. Oh. His backing band was the producer, Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses on bass, and Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers on drums.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And if you get a chance to listen to this album, I couldn't recommend it more. Like, it's really good.
the 2019 one?
Uh-huh. It's called Ordinary Man.
All right, all right.
And the title track he does with Elton John.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Because that's crazy. Because the one thing I was thinking while listening to this album, which I enjoyed, by the way. Awesome. And I'll get that out of the way. Enjoyed. Enjoyed. Because there's some hits on here, man. But his voice is so bonkers. And it's odd to hear him over these. And I wrote down, like, Elton John-esque piano ballad stuff. Because he's not like a crooner, right? Like, he's not a, you know, he's not a Elton John battling pianos, Billy Joel kind of dude. But, like, it still works. Like, the melodies are off the chain.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, Ozzy's, I guess, like, a voice is an instrument. And Ozzy's instrument is kind of like, there's nothing else like it, you know? And it's totally his own, and I think it really does shine on this record. This is just off the bat, like, I Don't Want to Change the World like, I mean, which I think won a Grammy for best metal performance or something like that. One of my all-time favorite. He hits that opening note, and it's like dun 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 dun. He goes, ugh, you know.
Like, yeah. I don't want to change the world, and I don't want the world to change me. Right? Is that what the line is? Yeah. I had never heard it before. Doug, very much Doug. Awesome. A lot of cool synth pads in here and on this album. Like a lot of cool synth. You know, it's like just tones and lines and all that. Yeah.
Especially on the title track. So I have this like belief that like Ozzy's albums are only as successful as like their guitarists playing on them. Mm-hmm. Ozzy's always defined by like his side man, which is a lead guitar player. Mm-hmm. You know, after he was fired from Black Sabbath.
Was he fired?
Yeah, he was let go.
Because of X, Y, and Z, I can assume.
Yeah, he just kind of was just out of control, you know.
Yeah.
And
there are stories.
Yeah. So he was paired with one of my favorite musicians of all time, Randy Rhoads. And Randy was this LA guitar player who is just a virtuoso. He was really one of the first to like combine like classical guitar into like metal guitar. And mm-hmm. it's not unusual to hear Randy Rhoads in the same breath as like Eddie Van Halen.
I was hearing a lot of Van Halen on this one too, yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, Randy passed away after Ozzy's second album. Mm. And then he got paired up with a guitarist named Jake Ely. And as a young guitarist who loved Ozzy Osbourne, knowing that he had a guitar player named Jake was just like the coolest thing in the world.
How about that?
And then after Jake played on Bark at the Moon, you know, he came out in the werewolf costume.
I'm not familiar.
Oh, if we'd ever do like Sipamimo's 80s version, we're rocking Bark at the Moon. And then came Zakk Wylde, who's this kind of like country metal guitarist, you know. Did you hear like, especially on like Mama I'm Coming Home, did you hear that kind of like
country? Yeah, putting a little twang to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Production's nuts. I feel like I say that every episode on these albums, but there's a lot of fade outs, which I didn't really care for.
Ozzy's guilty of doing a lot of fade outs. That's just kind of,
I'm sure that was just the style or whatever in that world. What was the, so 91, right? Mm-hmm. What was the state of metal in 91? Because we're not to grunge, we're not to new metal, we're not there yet, but.
Well, I was thinking about, we can talk about this, but 91 is actually the year Nevermind came out.
Oh, okay.
And I was thinking we could maybe do like a special episode to talk about Nevermind.
Sure. That's a big one.
But,
so this came out the same year as Nevermind.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. But are Guns N' Roses still a big thing right now? Like, yeah.
Guns N' Roses came out with Use Your Illusion 1 in 91.
Okay.
It looks like it was a good time to be a metalhead. I'm on the old Google right now.
So wait, Nevermind came out the same year as Black Album.
Isn't that insane?
So it was like a real, battle of which way rock is going to go kind of year.
Yeah.
How about that?
Soundgarden put out Bad Motor Finger that year.
Bad Motor Finger is that album one? That's not Black Hole Sun. Right?
That's one with Rusty Cage. You look at Ozzy and you see him, and you see that he, you know, Black Sabbath came from Birmingham, which is this industrial working class city. You know, and you look at him and you see that he really came from, you know, very, very like poor background, you know, but he was able to like have a hand in creating this like genre of music that, you know, and you look at him and you hear him, you say like, oh, you know, I can play metal, you know, like I can be a metal superstar. And I think it's just kind of like that everyman quality that I feel comfortable in comparing him to like a Bruce Springsteen, because I mean, no one ever accused Bruce of being a good singer, you know, iconic, you know, for what he does, but not like the best singer And I think it's just the way that artists like Bruce and Ozzy have the ability to connect with their listeners and just be on their level. And I think that's why, Ozzy has had the career that he's had, that he's just, I think that connection he has with his fans is really something profound. And he certainly had his struggles. This was, so 1991, so remember in like 82, that's when Ozzy peed on the Alamo Cenotaph in San Antonio. And, you know, and so he kind of pulled himself up from this like party animal, you know, persona and
eating bats and snorting ants and shit. Right? Yeah,
exactly.
Boy, oh boy.
And at this time, I think he had started cleaning himself. Like, I think he was sober now by this point. And if you look at him from this era, he looks healthy. He looks good.
I mean, that's him on the cover, right?
Like, yeah.
I'm like, damn, he was handsome. I'm like, all right.
Ozzy was a good looking dude.
Like, I see you, Ozzy. What up?
But yeah, I'm super glad you enjoyed this one. This was,
yeah.
Just reading about it. Lemmy Kilmister, I might be mispronouncing his last name, and I apologize. He actually co-wrote a lot of songs on this one.
That's not Motorhead Lemmy, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, how about that? Look, I know what things are.
What a character, you know, just
there, yeah.
You
know,
and just knowing that he had a hand in working on this album, just really, really cool. And like I said, I used to be obsessed with Ozzy growing up, and my mom, you know, bought me a documentary that came out around the release of this album. So it's like half album promotion, half like documentary about Ozzy. Mm-hmm. And there's like one point where he's talking to like his co-writer, and this guy's just like it's like kind of interesting dude. And he's just like, so Ozzy, I was thinking, you know, I was reading this book, and it was called Ladders to Fire. And Ozzy goes, Ladders to Fire. And he goes, yeah, Ladders to Fire. And I was thinking that would be a great song, you know, like, cause you know how there's the Stairway to Heaven, but what if we wrote a song called Ladders to Fire, and it's, you know, down there. And Ozzy goes, Ladders to Fire. And the guy's like, yeah, Ladders to Fire. And Ozzy just like walks off. He doesn't say anything. And he's just like, keeps on muttering to himself. He's like, Ladders to Fire.
Ladders to Fire.
You do a good Oz. That was good.
Well, that's decades later, Ozzy. When the phone rings, like, what the fuck is that? Anyways, Ladders to Fire.
Have you ever listened to Ozzy or?
I mean, oh sure, and I've heard, you know, plenty of these tunes before, like the big hits and all that. Like, man, there's like several like huge tunes in here. You know, I've done I think I did a deep dive into Sabbath. You know, when I was also like diving into AC/DC, I just liked the you know, those just the riffs. I was looking for like those repetitive riffs and all that, which AC/DC is perfect at. And then like, I was never like huge into like the Ozzy, you know, vocals and all that, but the riffs were always great, and like the Sabbath stuff was great. And to the point where when I think senior year of high school, we had a battle of bands, and me and a couple of buddies of mine just put together a band real quick. But we had, you know, keyboards and turntables and stuff like that. And we did a cover of Crazy Train.
Oh, nice.
I wonder if I could find that. That'd be fun. Put it on the gram. But you know, it was like no vocals. We just like did the you know the riff, and then we just like throw beats over it and all that. That was fun as hell. No More Tears is amazing. I really like Desire.
Desire's good,
dude. That's really good. I had never heard that one before. I'm like, this one kind of kicks ass. And like, you know, I love the synth pads, and I think that's how we can connect to the other album. You know, Zombie Stomp might be the best title of a song ever. Like, that's the everyone do the Zombie Stomp. Like, that's like, come on. If, I don't know why there's not like a famous dance named after that. but I dug the album, man, and then it's cool shit. And it seems like he's trying to say something, you know, No More Tears. And like there seems like there's an element of, you know, he mentions it, especially with the opening track, Mr. Whatever the hell it was, and all that, like kids, you want some candy and shit. And then like who is the real stranger? You know, that seems to be like the you know, the message he's trying to say, like you know, I forget what track it is, but it's like, didn't your mother ever tell you that, you know, not to talk to strangers? Now look in the mirror. Do you feel like that your life is in danger? Because like he's looking in the mirror and like he's a stranger himself. Like it sounds like he's going through entering a new chapter in his life. And I think that's very interesting. And like I've never considered him quite the lyricist, but oh boy, the poetry is right there.
There's, and the cool thing is that he co-writes all those things. And so there's some really really profound stuff. Like one of my favorites is Road to Nowhere.
Yeah.
And what is it like? I was looking back on my life and all the things I've done to me. I'm still looking for the answers. I'm still searching for the key. You know, like that could be like a country song, you know, and And just, I mean, of course, you bring in like Zakk Wylde's like redonkulous guitar, and it's just,
there's a certain like country storytelling sensibility going on here. I would never think of, you know, Ozzy as the storyteller, but how about that? Mostly yeah. Because he can't speak these days. I'm sorry. He's still around, right? Is he still with us?
Yes.
Ozzy? Oh, I'm going to say it. Now he's going to die tomorrow.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, no.
But no, I'm glad you enjoyed this one, man. This was...
Yeah.
I know I've talked about it before, but I just finished my thesis on heavy metal in... the history of heavy metal in San Antonio, and Ozzy Osbourne and Black Sabbath had a very big hand in that, so it was very exciting to listen to this album and discuss it for a little bit. So
absolutely, man. Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
are you gonna be able to put your thesis up online somewhere so the listeners can check it out?
Yeah, most definitely. That would be really cool. It's gonna be on my school's website, so we'll definitely post it on like a story or something. And
oh, you better, man. Yeah. Yeah.
What did you bring to the table today?
You know, when we chose our albums last time we recorded, I was a little nervous because I'm like, how are these albums going to go together? But sure enough, there's always, you know, we are contrasting as well as comparing, and all the you know, beautiful synth pads and No More Tears like correlate quite well. And also on the track No More Tears, it kind of breaks down and goes into two different parts. There's like movements in it, which I really dug, and that I think reminds me a lot of Orbital's Insides. Here we go.
So, Orbital's Insides from 1996.
Yes. Jake, what did you think of Orbital's Insides?
Well, you know, it reminded me a lot of another album that we listened to earlier this year by an artist named BT.
And it's, okay.
ESCM. Mm-hmm. Electric Sky Music. No, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got it.
I nailed it. Yes.
Is it Sky Church Music, I think. Yeah.
A lot of synths on this one.
Yes.
Very, very synth, which I like. I think because I'm drawn to synths because I grew up playing piano, and I've always been very into like synthesizers and you know, electronic pop music from the 80s. I'm fascinated by it because it's truly an art form, and to be able to go in there and manipulate a keyboard to get these type of sounds is just, I think it's beautiful. And when someone does it well, like Orbital, it's very inspiring. And I have a synth, and there are so many knobs that I've never bothered with that didn't say, you know, because I like,
oh,
don't know what they do, you know. But no, it was neat.
Oh, you didn't like it, did you?
No, it was cool. Like
neat.
Maybe neat's the wrong word. it made me think more.
Okay.
About the songs, like one song in particular.
Yes, please.
Out There Somewhere Part 2.
Oh boy, yeah.
Like when I say makes me think, like I mean, like, you know, because we've listened to music, you know, for, you know, our entire lives, and you think you hear like a note, and you're thinking like, oh, I know where this, I have an idea where this is gonna go, but Orbital more times than not proved me wrong on that, and
I love that.
That was they went like a minor instead of like a major, and it kind of caught me, and I was like, oh shoot, okay. So that's what I mean when I say it was neat. Like, not like, oh, that's neat. The puppet show is neat. No, no, but that's what I meant when I say neat. Like, not like a negative neat, you know, as there is certainly a negative neat.
Negative one neat. That
like, kind of like kept me on my toes while listening to it, you know. made me like, oh, okay, like, you know, I you know, maybe I should throw out any like thing I have. Anything I had in mind, I would be like, okay, like this guy proved me, or I don't know too much about this artist, but
right. Well, I think you're saying a bit like the music either deserves your full attention, or it can be on in the background, because it is kind of an ambient techno record, so it can be. Very. and they really let these tracks breathe. I mean, they're quite long. When you're kind of meant to be enveloped in them, and you can sit there and listen and be like, oh wow, they did something very unexpected there, and they changed it up there, and all this, you know, so you can really absorb into it. It might be a good album to put on whatever when you're high as shit, and because it's quite calming, but also it can get kind of scary with the Out There Somewhere tracks. Get a little intense and with The Box 1 and 2. So Orbital is a pair of brothers, Paul and Phil Hartnell. They're from Kent, I believe. They're named Orbital after a highway in, I think, London or whatever, called the M25, or whatever. It's just a big loop and they would take it, they would use that loop, that orbital, to get to you know, raves and stuff like that, and clubs, and play out. And so they're known for this, you know, wild ambient techno with a lot of synth and a lot of melody and a lot of improvisation in their live shows. They don't DJ. They bring their gear out, and they always has a little element of improvisation. These two brothers, they famously wear these cool little headlights on the side of their heads. That kind of became their thing, in the same way that like Daft Punk has their helmets, Deadmau5 has his big fucking head, Orbital's got the little head mounted lights so they can see their boards and all that, because they're doing stuff up there. They're not push and play, they're moving stuff around, they're playing things. So just as there are like 47 different formats of the album insides, you know, depending on what label it moved to, or what, you know, reissue it is, or what edition it is, what vinyl or CD or tape or whatever the hell, so is every song of theirs. It's just kind of an idea, and every time they play it, it's a little bit different. Really hoping you were able to find is the 1997 UK bonus disc with a few tracks on there, including the Saint, the Sinner, Satan Live, and Halcyon Live. I was, I guess, I don't know, 11, and like I was really into this album, and it kind of blew my mind. And I was in like the car with my mom, and I played Satan Live, and we know Satan from, I think it was on the Spawn soundtrack, right? There was a version of Satan with Kirk Hammett on it.
Really?
Yeah.
Kirk Hammett from Metallica?
Yeah, of course. No, the different Kirk Hammett.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll play that under this, and I'll send you a link. By the way, if you see your mom this weekend, be sure and tell her Satan, 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 and it cuts to them. And I was playing it for my mom because I thought it was neat. And she, like, it was one of those times when, like, oh my god, I'm in trouble, because mom just slammed on the brakes in the minivan. And she flipped the fuck out. She was like, wait till your dad gets home. Of course, neither of them bothered to finish the tune or figure out what this band is. We were told to destroy the album. My father said it was music of the enemy.
That's a good name for an album.
Music of the Enemy?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. I'm into that. But like, you know, our you know, dad yelled at us, my brother and I, and my brother was super pissed at me. He's like, dude, that's like an awesome album. Like, don't fuck this up. And then they never really followed up with it. I think my dad was like, quote, throw it away, quote.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. And I was like, whew. And so we never threw it away. We just kind of kept it. But then, you know, we got our disc commands, and just, you know, that's how we listened to music for the rest of our years at home. But the album is it's ethereal and beautiful and interesting, and like they're, you know, playing vocals in reverse. They're finding weird samples. They're exploring like ideas and stuff like that. And all with these like amazing synth pads and you know, melodies and all that. The bonus disc that I really hoped you were able to track down, were you able to?
I was not. The only one I had was the live version of Halcyon.
Halcyon. Did you listen to it?
I did. So listening to the album, which, like I was saying, is, you know, is primarily like synth driven, when they jump to the, you know, John Bon Jovi, Belinda Carlisle mashup, I was like, that totally caught me off guard.
On a certain release of Insides, there's a bonus disc, and it's, you know, Satan Live, Saint the Sinner, I think one more track, and then Halcyon Live, and I think it's Wide Park or something like that. And they're playing Halcyon, which is probably their best track, or their best known track, you know. It's been in a lot of flicks. It closes out Mean Girls. It closes out Mortal Kombat, the original Mortal Kombat movie.
Really?
Yeah.
So these guys have been, you know, kind of like sown throughout my pop culture obsessed life, and I just didn't know it. I didn't realize it.
You've been an Orbital fan all this time.
I think so. They've been in my
orbit. And this performance that they recorded and put out there, it all of a sudden just slams into Bon Jovi and Belinda Carlisle. And then they start, they fade out the Bon Jovi and then start playing the Belinda Carlisle, Heaven Is a Place on Earth, in reverse, and then bring back in the Halcyon bass line and vocals. And it's my favorite recorded performance of any song ever.
Really?
It just absolutely is. When I was a kid listening to that, and like getting into electronic music, and like, I'm like, I think this is, you know, my kind of music. It's repetitive and it makes sense in my little weird spectrum-y ADD child brain. But like this song, this track, I was like, does this count as a song? You're allowed to do this? It was like an early example of like what sampling was, and like, this counts as a song though. This counts as a song? And it blew my goddamn mind. It's been ever present on like mixtapes I've made all through the years. It is just transcendent and beautiful, and it rocks out, and there's a beautiful, like really live tambourine element to it. The tambourine, I could talk about the tambourine. Absolutely stunning. I don't know, I think it's fantastic.
It reminded me when we talked about, I mentioned BT, you sent me, right after we recorded, you sent me, I think it may have been a European only release track, the Lullabies for Gaia.
Yeah, Lullabies for Gaia, yeah.
Gaia. And I said, if that was on the album that was on where I was streaming it, that would have been my favorite song.
Yeah.
And when you sent me the live version of Halcyon, I thought the same thing. I was like, had this been on there, this would have been my favorite, my favorite song on the track.
I think it's fucking fantastic. Oh my god.
So this was your Orbital is pretty formative for your electronic taste in electronic music.
Yeah, it kind of built the foundation for what this is like. Pure electronica. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. There's no like, oh, it's this form of dance. It's this form of trance. It's not quite techno. It's not house. It's not trance. It's not breakbeat. It's not drum and bass. It's just electronic music. And it's I guess perhaps it's like the, you know, closest to Kraftwerk I might bring up and stuff like that. So meaning if we consider Kraftwerk like the beginning of this sort of thing, then Orbital is like, you know, one of the next stages of it. And then that kind of laid down the foundation in my head of what electronic music was.
So one of the, when we talked about Portishead, we talked about the Bristol sound. Because it was like Portishead and Massive Attack. Is there a Kent sound that Orbital is part of? Is this, are there other notable artists that you can think of from Kent, or are they?
I don't know who their peers would be. I don't know about electronic music from Kent necessarily. I know that they toured with Moby for a bit, and
I could see how that'd be a great tour.
I think that was just kind of also like mid-90s happenstance, because Moby was blowing up with Everything Is Wrong, and then these guys were blowing up with this album and everything, and these kind of ended up on a tour together. And they said Moby was a prick. Like, they didn't like him at all. I don't know. Yeah. These guys are like, I don't know who they're.
They just kind of like a league of their own kind of thing.
Yeah, they're kind of their own thing. I mean, yeah, I suppose they are. I mean, I'm sure you could, you know, listeners could compare, you know, other guys from the era, like, perhaps The Orb, which is another duo that do like a lot of like weird ethereal stuff, and they're named very similarly, you know. But these guys are not Prodigy, you know. They're not rock and roll. They're not Daft Punk. They're not quite dance music. They're not, you know, I could see him opening up for Chemical Brothers or something like that because of just because of the melodies and the kind of euphoria of it all. But they're kind of doing their own thing.
Yeah, I heard a lot of BT, especially there's like some acoustic guitar in certain parts of the album. That's what made me think of BT. Mm-hmm. I think it was The Box Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the songs kind of reminded me, they're very like dramatic sounding songs, like if they would have been dropped into and I think I may have like made this comparison before, but maybe it's just because it's so iconic, but like it's very like espionage, very like almost James Bond in a lot of ways. Like if they were to score like a Bond movie, I think they would just absolutely crush it, because very like very cinematic. There's a very cinematic quality to their music. What are you laughing at?
No, I'm giggling because I got you. On the bonus disc that includes Satan Live and Halcyon Live, the track that I sent you, because I had to make sure you had listened to that at least, with the Bon Jovi and everything, which also connects us to Ozzy a bit.
Yeah.
There's a track called The Saint on there, and a track called The Sinner, which is a companion piece to The Saint. And The Saint was written for the movie The Saint with Val Kilmer, which is about like spies and espionage and all that. And so they go full on James Bondy with it. Absolutely. Yeah. And I guess in regards to like the BT thing, BT is like, you know, this one guy, and he's like, you call him, you might say a maximal producer. Like he's, you know, we have to be touched on him being kind of a show off. Like, look at all this. Look at how much I know how to do this. I know how to record everything. Oh my God. Blah, blah, blah. I'm going to throw everything into this song. These guys are a little bit more on the minimal side. They're like, let's strip down and like, We're gonna start with a heartbeat. Whoop, whoop. Let's start with that orbital. That whoop, whoop. What is a rhythm really? And then build slowly off that. And
that, yeah, that opening track, girl
with the sun in her head.
It starts off with
that. My, yeah. Whoop,
whoop. Yes. So we have very loud upstores.
Sipping mimos.
Sipping mimos. And we have very loud upstairs neighbors who walk very heavy. And so when I put that, I had it on my speaker while I was working today and heard that boom. I was like, these mother.
Oh, you thought it was.
And then I quickly realized it was the song.
Wow. That's great.
And then for once, I was not mad. And I was like, okay, I'm totally cool with that.
Boom, boom, boom. So a lot of these songs like are they come from like a place of like a pain that the brothers are going through. Halcyon is about their mother being hospitalized. Girl with the Sun in Her Head is about a photographer friend that they knew that passed. So they compose these pieces, and since some of their best work is out of pain and loss, and they're able to transform that into something. I don't know. I think it's fantastic. So this album was very important to me. Do you think you'll give it another go?
Absolutely. Yeah, I texted in our mini unintended break. I texted Elliot and told him about another album we talked about recently, DJ Shadows Introducing. I actually was fortunate to find a copy of it on vinyl. Yeah. And while working on my paper, I definitely threw that on, and it was just kind of like was something to vibe out to while focusing on a project. And I can certainly see, you know, Orbital being in that carriage, something I could turn on, but also like give it that respect it deserves, you know, because they certainly deserve it, and they certainly kept me on my toes while listening to this one, and I'm excited to listen to it because I love delay. I notice a lot of delay on this record. When I would make electronic music, one of my favorite things to do was I had a MIDI pad. I guess I still do. Oh man, I can't wait to be done with school. I had a MIDI pad, and I would assign like a synthesizer keys to like a pad. And I would play a synthesizer like you would like a drum pattern.
Mm-hmm.
that was like, that was my favorite thing to do. And I heard, I don't know if they do that same technique, and that was one of my favorite things. And I heard a lot of that. I don't know if they do that same technique, if they did that same technique, but it was, it was really cool, especially because so much of the music I enjoy listening to is synth driven, and this was just filled to the brim. So
awesome.
Fantastic recommend.
Awesome. Cool, man. Yeah. This album's, you know, huge for me, formative, I guess you'd say. And like, these guys ended up being like, and they've like, you know, over the years broken up and gotten back together, blah, blah, blah. But they were always big, like festival headliner favorites, like, especially like, you know, across the pond, I suppose. And like, cause they put on a great show, and like, you know, I mean, you listen to that Halcyon Live, people are just losing their goddamn minds. So, I mean, they're a fun group to go check out.
But no, I thought it was a solid recommend, and it made it...
Solid recommend?
Absolutely.
It didn't change your life? Damn it, Jake. I told you, last time we recorded, I'm like, if you don't like this one, I swear to God.
It was off.
It's okay.
No, it was... It was a great record, and made even greater by the fact that I now that I know how much it meant to you. So,
thanks, man.
Of course. But yeah, well, do you have an idea of what we're going to talk about next time?
Well, I've got my list. I think you should go first.
Okay. So I was thinking about, I was looking back at our my list of artists we've talked about, and in my, I don't mean to keep on bringing up my project, but it's kind of all I've been thinking about, like, for the past, like,
oh, years. No worries, man, come on.
Rock music, especially heavy metal, driven by, it's unfortunately, because there's an incredible amount of, you know, diverse artists, often men in the rock genre get that spotlight, get that recognition, when there are so many women rockers that deserve it, you know. So I was thinking about going with a female fronted band. This one, I have so many memories of listening to this record at all points of my life. And it's the artist has gone on to do so many amazing things. I've wanted to talk about this record for a super long time. It's one of my favorite. It incorporates a lot of Elliott's influences and electronic European style. I've mentioned it before on the pod, and I'd like to welcome, formerly, Madonna.
Oh, God.
With 1998's Ray of Light.
Is this allowed? Is this allowed?
Madonna is totally a rock star.
you come at me with Madonna, bro?
Have you ever jammed Ray of Light?
Yeah, I know the song.
The album, like the album.
Wait, so you're going dance music at me? You're coming at me with dance music.
It's not full blown dance music.
It's not radio rock. Would you call it that? What am I supposed to do now?
Just keep an eye out for Frozen. That's my
favorite. I remember Frozen. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Woo! I'm excited to hear. As an electronic musicologist, I'm excited to hear what you think about this record.
It's quite well produced because it's produced by William Orbit. I already know this. So there you go. Schooled. Okay. all right. Since you're doing, wow, I did not expect that. You know, since I've been listening to so much metal, Madonna. Shit. Let's see. I got my little list and all that.
It was a toss up between Cher, Madonna, and No Doubt.
Cher?
It would have been Cher's Believe.
You just want to go full dance with it, don't you? Because are these the albums that, you know, I would never ever pick?
These three.
These dance out. Okay. Every time I'm Googling, like, you know, electronic slash dance music from the 90s, like Madonna keeps on popping up. I'm like, ah. But
I'm excited to hear, because there, Ray of Light is like her like rebirth. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's like Madonna reintroducing herself to the 21st century. I'm so excited for this.
Okay. Well, all right. You know what? Okay, cool. Well, that, well now, since we got, we're doing Madonna and I got insides out of the way, we're going to take a little trip to Vegas. An album called Vegas by another duo, of course, The Crystal Method.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're doing it.
The band I thought was the Blade Band for yes. like 20 years.
Well, you know what it is? There's a song on the album Vegas called Keep Hope Alive, or it goes, you know, or whatever. And it sounds very much like that. It has a
But the Blade song is a New Order song, right?
It's a New Order. It's a remix of New Order's Confusion by the Pump Panel.
See, but Crystal Method famously did The Name of the Game, which
is a song called Name of the Game,
which appeared in Blade 2 when he was fighting the vampire at the end. He put the vampire in like a suplex. Blade 2 is fantastic, but that was just kind of silly. And it is saved. It is. So I have Crystal Method is on Vegas is on Crystal Method's popular releases.
Of course. Don't bother with any bonus super editions or whatever. Just get the OG Vegas.
Just confirmed. Ray of Light is not on Madonna's popular releases. But you know what? Whatever.
Well, we'll have to dive into the whole discography of Madonna to talk about why Ray of Light was interesting, right?
We're gonna be sipping Mimos rest of 2021. Just gonna dedicate it to Madonna's discography.
Okay,
but
Madonna versus Crystal Method. All right, I'm there for it. That's gonna be a fun one.
Two artists I imagine have very rarely been spoken in the same title, but that's the one thing, well, one thing amongst many that I love about this project is that we can take, you know, Sugar Ray and the Prodigy and make an episode about it. It's my
absolutely favorite
thing ever.
It's pretty cool.
But until next time.
Yes.
Give us a follow on Apple Podcasts. If you
subscribe.
Subscribe. If you can, give us a good rating. Let us know what you want to hear. Yeah. Give us some ideas. You know, I came this close to doing Jules' Pieces of You. It's coming. Don't worry.
Oh, and what do I have? I'm like, pleasure delaying over here. I've got a whole list of stuff. I can't wait to touch you.
I updated my list today.
Really? I'm really. We will get to Moby at a certain point, yes. But it won't be the album you think it is. and I'm really psyched to. I really want you to listen to. Maybe when it's really warm out, we'll do Armand Van Helden. I think you'll dig in that.
Would you end the podcast if I made you listen to LFO in the summertime?
I wouldn't end the podcast. I'd be upset. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed, Jake. That's all.
All right, maybe I'll hold back on the LFO.
No, it's okay. No. Come correct and come real. we keep it real on Sippin' Mimos.
Keeping it real.
Always.
Bring it back to Chappelle.
Yeah.
But Instagram, Sippin' Mimos Pod, give us a follow and see out there in the interwebs. Listen to Orbital and Ozzy.
Yeah.
And I've started saying stay sipping.
I like it.
I think it's my thing.
Should we do like and for Sippin' Mimos, I'm Elliot. I'm Drake. Ooh, stay sipping together. Is that too cheesy?
I like that.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening. And hey, for Sippin' Mimos, I'm Elliot.
And I'm Jake. Stay sipping. We'll work that out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Doo-doo-doo. Doo-doo. All right.